Chapter 9. Sturndrang, Underhive of Mollio. No one else approached them as they delved deeper into Mollio's fetid underbelly. Zartath's massacring of Carve and his gang enough to keep others at bay. Through the tunnels, the atrophied gantries and abandoned block towers, beneath the low, grimy fog underfoot and the distant skeletal remains of once regal domiciles, Agatone was certain that eyes watched from the febrile darkness. He detected fear and a weakness of spirit in the marrow of this desolate place, one he had only found previously in the enslaved. Most other chapters would have despised the human underclass that dwelled in Lower Mollior, but as a salamander, Agatone pitied them. Zartath had a less humane philosophy.
"They reek of fear, this waste," he said, his voice a guttural snarl of distaste. "This pit is ripe with it, that and corruption. I was held prisoner, but I was never a slave. Not like this. Small wonder that taint has crept in. Weak minds are ever prey to it."
Through his belligerence, Zartath betrayed himself. A slight tremor in the cheek under the right eye at the memory of his incarceration by the Dark Eldar. For the longest time he had scavenged to survive and watched his brothers slain. It had changed him, made him into something that was more animal than man. But despite his savage edge, he still felt. Back aboard the Forge Hammer, after they had left their brothers, Agatone's brothers, in truth, for although liveried in green drake scale and having endured the rite of pain, Zartath still had the feral beating heart of a dragon. Agatone had seen the ex-black dragon at prayer. His words were guttural, more like growls and snarls, but they were imprecations and devotions of faith. It was a rare moment of stillness, one Agatone did not interrupt nor reveal his witnessing of later. Zartath had been given a fresh suit of power armor upon his induction to the chapter, artificered by none other than Forge Master Argos. But he had insisted on keeping his old and battered trappings. A relic, scarcely effective protection anymore, Agatone believed Zartath had kept them to remind himself of who he was and where he had come from. It gave the captain hope that his savage charge was more than just a beast. Even so, though his assessment of the pitiful wretches they had seen in Lower Mollior was harsh, it was an opinion likely to be shared by many of the Adeptus Astartes.
"They look starved to me, not tainted," said Agatone. "Don't judge so harshly. We don't know how long these people have been the grist for the millstones of their overseers, or which potentate has them firmly beneath their heel."
"Are we liberators now, then, Captain? Do you wish to save these wretches from themselves?"
Agatone did not answer. On this mission, redemption extended only to one, and he was proving elusive. There was a plague upon this place, though. Whether a moral or spiritual decay, Agatone did not know, but whatever the source, it was virulent. Only now, as they drilled down, was it evident how rotten to the core they had become. A warrior such as Chugan, even in disgrace, would have seen it had he ventured this way, this deep. Agatone wondered if he had tried to find the source and been outmatched, or had he been too wounded to do anything but stagger hopefully towards aid. The image was incomplete, a fact that more than irked the salamander's captain. They pressed on. After wandering through a labyrinth of tunnels, walkways, and the low-ceilinged sub-hives pressed upon by the multitudinous levels above them, Agatone and Zartath emerged into what amounted to a settlement. It was no more than an industrialized shanty, a few aggregated structures and a populace of dirty-faced, malnourished individuals that huddled in packs around drum fires. There were vendors selling dubious meat, some weapons and crude supplies. All of it was trash, gathered from the refuse of the hive, but none of these would-be entrepreneurs dared approach the newcomers. The appearance of the bulky, obviously armed and armored strangers sent herds of these human dregs scurrying for the dark and further anonymity. Agatone wondered who else had visited these poor wretches and what their purpose might be.
"Eyes and ears, Zartath," Agatone murmured, but the ex-Black Dragon's awareness was already at its peak.
Exor was a dead weight on Agatone's shoulder, and he noticed some of the bolder inhabitants approach a little closer for a better look at his burden, muttering in hushed whispers to one another when they saw it was a body he carried. Mercifully, the Tech Marine was still breathing and had not yet slipped into Susan membrane coma. If that happened, reviving him would not be easy. Certainly it could not be achieved with whatever crude technology the Underhivers possessed. Walking slowly through the procession of rough buildings that shouldered against each other like malformed teeth, their facades badly abraded, Agatone looked for signs that might indicate a medical facility. He winced. The keening sound Zartath had mentioned earlier was still echoing in his head. It actually seemed louder, and he wondered if he had spat out the tainted blood too slowly. As they reached the square of this frontier settlement, a welcoming committee at last met the two warriors. It was one armed with guns and blades, 10 men strong. They looked weak, fearful, as well they might. Others, too many to discern numbers, cowered in the shadows cast by the ramshackle buildings.
Collection isn't until next cycle, stammered the leader, an old-looking man with pepper-wash stubble and narrow weasel-like eyes.
One looked much the same as another to Agatone, and once again he railed at the filth and depravity of these men and women. Each wore a haphazard agglomeration of armor plate, plastic, and some form of hide that he assumed was flensed from the indigenous fauna of Molior's Underhive. Their weapons were machetes, or the lengths of sharp metal bent roughly to resemble makeshift blades with taped-up grips. Crude, ratchet-action shotguns and rusty-looking stubbers served as firepower. Agatone wondered if they were even loaded as the men moved to encircle them both.
"We're not here to collect," he told the leader. "Because we gave up our tithe. We gave up a full flock, as ordered," said the old man.
Now he had the strangers in his sights and surrounded, he grew a little bolder.
"You get nothing more from us."
"Tithe?" Agatone asked, intrigued. The old man looked confused, as if answering a question Agatone should already know the answer to.
"For the 7 points."
"We're strangers here," Agatone explained. "What are the 7 points?"
Zartath was eyeing the natives dangerously. Surreptitiously, Agatone held out his hand in a silent signal to stand down. They could kill or incapacitate these men in a matter of seconds, but Agatone needed information, not more bodies.
"Not ah," said the old man with a half smile,
the kind a native gets when he realizes he has outsiders in his midst and sees the possibility for exploitation.
"Is. The 7 points is an arena. Some folks call it the cross, though 7 points is more accurate."
Agatone scowled.
"You'll understand when you see it," said the leader. "Silas Kreb and Otmar the Brute own it. They own everything around these parts. Their gangers set up the fights, and we, amongst others, provide the fighters. We've only given up dregs before, but this time we had a real prize for him."
The leader flashed an ugly smile, revealing 3 gilded teeth. Agathon also noticed his coat and pistol were of a higher quality than the rest of his apparel. No doubt the spoils of his slave trading. Despite his best efforts, Agathon found his anger rising. Zartath was far ahead of him.
"What arena?"
Zartath snapped, painful associative memories resurfacing.
"What did you give them?"
The old man paled, his brief confidence ebbing as surely as Agatone's patience, as he caught a glimpse of Zartath's exposed fangs beneath the ex-black dragon's hood. He started babbling.
"We patched up a big one, big as you he was, and a stranger too. We sent him."
He pointed, and his hand was shaking.
"That way."
Agathon stepped in. It was do that or allow Zartath to kill them all.
"You have a medicus, then?" asked Agathon.
The old man nodded.
"Show me to him," said Agathon. "Now."
"And if we don't?" said one of the crowd behind the leader, a youth with more bravura than sense. Agathon pulled his cloak aside to afford the human dregs a glance at his armor and bolt pistol.
"That would be unwise," he counseled. "Now," he said, "your medicus. My friend is injured and in need of aid."
"You are far from the stars, adept,"
a strong but veteran voice uttered from the shadows. The surgery was a grim and poorly lit facility, although the word facility did it overdue credit. It huddled between two other structures, stubby tenements rammed with more of the human waste that dwelled in the Underhive settlement. A wrought iron staircase, indicated by the leader of the men who had first stopped them, led to this hovel, and now he had found it, Agathon was beginning to regret his decision to seek aid here.
"You know of the Adeptus Astartes, do you, Medicus?"
Agathon stepped forwards into the dull lamplight of a hanging phosphor globe. It was the room's only illumination and flickered intermittently.
"Some," he admitted. "I once fought beside them as part of His Eternal Majesty's ecclesiarchy. And my name is Isak," said the man. He too then moving into the light. "Though I'd suggest we get acquainted later so I can see to your friend."
Whilst he reconnoitred the surgery, making sure it was not a foolish attempt at an ambush, Agathon had given Exor up to Zartath. Judging by the ex-black dragon's mood, he was not confident Zartath could stay his killing mood and in error gut the one man who might be able to restore Exor, should he, in fact, prove to be genuine. As he regarded the weathered features but bright ruby-coloured eyes of the one who had introduced himself as Isak, Agathon was glad of that decision.
"I saw you,"
said Isak, tapping a gnarled finger against a cracked picked screen which showed the area immediately outside of the surgery's door,
"and heard the booming thunder of your voices all the way down in the square."
His eyes narrowed.
"I wonder what three adepts of the stars are doing here in Kabula."
"Kabula?"
"This settlement's name, or as was," said the medicus. "Few live now that remember it or care. Many call it the sink. I'm sure you can appreciate why."
The nomenclature was an appropriate one. This place was a hole, a sink in all respects. Isak gestured to the door behind Agathon with his chin.
"You'd better bring him in."
Agathon watched Isak keenly as he worked. Together, he and Zartath had managed to get Exor inside the surgery and onto the operating table. Despite its roughshod appearance, Agathon discovered the place was clean and sanitized. The tools at Isak's disposal were simply beyond their best, and patchwork as a result. The air was acerbic with counter-septic chemicals, and Isak performed his ministrations behind a half-masked rebreather. He also wore a dark tan medical smock over functional leggings, a crumpled shirt, and padded flak vest. Agathon noted, even though it was tight, Isak did not remove the armor to perform surgery. The room was cramped with equipment, various filters, files, and bespoke medical machinery, all hinted at and half shrouded in shadow. With Agatone's help, Isak had removed Exor's armor, surprisingly not reacting to the Tech Marine's bionic augmentations. As to the extent and nature of Exor's injuries, the medicus had merely said, "You need to climb when the klaxons wail. That's Vermintide, and is best avoided, even for warriors such as you."
"Had we known that, you would not be here now, I understand."
Isak worked quickly and diligently, first cleaning the wounds, careful not to get any of Exor's blood on his skin directly, though he could not have known of the true origin of its poison, and then sealing them where necessary. He used an adhesive gel rather than thread, trusting to the meager medical provisions available to him. Agathon had only ever seen an apothecary work with greater skill at patching up an Adeptus Astartes.
"You said you fought with us before?" asked Agathon.
"Not you, precisely. Another chapter,"
Isak replied. His attention was mostly absorbed by his ministrations, so he only glanced at Agathon when he added,
"Nor your other friend's chapter either."
Zartath waited outside, as ordered. There was little room in the surgery, and the reek of blood was having an undesirable effect on him. It affected Agathon too, and made the keening seem louder. Perhaps, though, it was just the tight confines of the surgery. Agathon ran a hand through his crest of hair and found his forehead was lathered with sweat. Isak glanced up.
"Should I examine you next?"
"It's nothing," Agathon replied, then asked, "You know something of our order?"
Isak had tended the physical wounds as well as he could. It had taken time, and the medicus was obviously not a young man, but went about his task with vigor and purpose. Agathon suspected it had been a while since Isak had found genuine fulfillment in his work.
"I am Nocturnian, I should."
The deep red pupils, the leathern skin darkened by the sun, Agathon saw it at once.
"Vulcan's name, you are, aren't you?"
"Epithemus. Like so few of my fellow Nocturnians, I sought a different path to that of Ore Miner or Black Smiter. I boarded a ship, part of a human auxilia, and after a few years of war, I found a different calling on a nearby shrine world. I became a missionary, entrusted with teaching the Emperor's glory to the heathen and the ill-educated,"
said Isak, as he scrubbed his hands clean for the next stage of Exor's ministrations.
"Molior seemed as foul a place as any to begin."
"How long have you been here, Medicus?"
"Over 30 years. I ventured down into the Underhives when I heard of the squalor and depravity there. I took the role of Medicus because I used to be a field surgeon. If at the same time as healing broken bones, I could heal the crack in a man's faith, then I would consider that a blessing and a good day."
"And have you had many? Good days, I mean?"
"Fewer than I would like," Isak admitted. "But I try to keep faith."
"And what does your faith tell you about my friend's chances of recovery?"
"His blood is tainted, but you already knew that."
Isak put on fresh surgical gloves and went to retrieve a device from a locked cabinet he had close to hand. Agathon considered just how worldly wise this medicus was. As a missionary in the Ecclesiarchy, he would be privy to some knowledge, but clearly he had experience of the chaotic. To Agathon's mind, it was wasted here, and he wondered what must have driven Isak to seek out this life, this place. Perhaps it was penance. Perhaps that's why Tsugan had fled here, too. It was the closest thing they could find to hell, a fitting place for sinners, Agathon supposed. It mattered little. He needed Exor, and so he needed Issac. The Ecclesiarchy's loss would be Agathon's gain. He could live with that, but he still had questions.
You saw another of my kind recently?
Is that really a question?
Issac worked as he talked, preparing his tools for the patient.
No, admitted Agathon. How bad were his injuries? The alderman said you had patched him up.
The alderman's name is Garvat, and your quarry left here half conscious but alive. You are hunting this man, I assume.
Agathon nodded, seeing no value in obfuscation at this point. Issac continued.
The sore bones at 7 points would see to the rest of his treatment.
And his blood? Was he tainted like my brother's here? Is that why he nearly succumbed to his injuries?
No, it wasn't, Issac answered flatly. I assume he climbed.
The crash had obviously hurt Tsugan badly enough that he had been forced to seek aid in Kabula. Despite the Medicus's efforts, it had left him weakened enough that a group of human slavers had been able to take him prisoner. What happened after they got him to the arena, that Agathon did not know.
You expected to learn more? Asked Issac, seeing the space marine lost in thought.
Honestly, I don't know. I hoped.
Agatone's gaze strayed from the shadows around them back to Exor, lying supine on the Medicus's slab.
How could you tell? He asked.
About the blood? A warning in my gut. A disquiet I have learned to recognize. It's hard to explain.
None is needed. Just tell me, can you cure him?
Yes, but it's not a matter of faith, brother
Agathon.
Agathon. Yes, he needs blood. Your blood, to be precise, as it's a close genetic match.
A transfusion?
Exactly.
Issac set the device up on a bench, and Agathon saw that its purpose was the exsanguination of a patient or donor. Agathon frowned.
Will that work? It seems simplistic.
I believe so. The blood carries a pathogen that is currently inhibiting your friend's ability to regenerate. We remove enough of that pathogen by transfusing your blood for his. We restore his natural regenerative ability.
How long?
A few hours. It might take 5 or 6 transfusions. Perhaps during the wait, you can tell me why you are here and not upon some battlefield somewhere.
Agathon turned from the machine to look the Medicus in the eye.
What makes you think we are not on a battlefield?
Issac nodded as Agathon began to remove his greave for the first transfusion. He clicked on the comm bead.
Zartath, maintain watch on our perimeter, Agathon said. Exor can be healed, but it's going to take a few hours.
A grunted affirmative returned on the other end of the feed before the link was cut. Agathon had given the hound his leash. Now he would find out just how tame the ex-black dragon was.